He struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Together, we shall write an American story of hope, not fear.
Ah, yes. We are singing. We are dancing. We are feeling amazing. What an incredible day yesterday was. The inauguration of Joseph Biden, our 46th president. Oh, what a happy day. And I love this song. Check out this version. Isn't it great? As you can tell, I am still buzzing from yesterday's events. I don't know what it is about the pageantry of the inauguration. It just feels so significant because it is. It represents so much of what our country stands for. And just with what we've been enduring for the last 4 years, which seems like an eternity, I just feel totally, totally reinvigorated. Do you feel the same way? I hope so. Hey, it's Mark Farrell. This show's Insights on the Progressive Radio Network. Of course, we're going to be talking about the inauguration yesterday. The speech, the attendees, the music, the performances on all different levels, and of course, the concert at night, which was just stellar. And also, we're going to meet an incredible individual, Amy Friedman. Have you ever thought about the people who were incarcerated? Yes, I'm sure you have. But what about the people who are remaining outside the bars? What are their lives like? The siblings, the offspring, the children of people who are imprisoned. What do they have to go through? Well, they have to endure a lot. And Amy Friedman's going to talk about an organization, POPS, that she started years ago that is benefiting students nationwide. You got to check out this story from Amy. Incredible stuff. So yeah, I was glued to the TV as much as I could yesterday. And also when I was getting off the air at a different station, listening to the inauguration on the radio. Just phenomenal. The backdrop of freedom where the anarchy took place days ago couldn't have been more vast. And of course, seeing the Clintons there, Hillary and Bill. God, Bill didn't sound too good, did he? Worse than usual. Obama, oh my God, it's just a sheer joy to see Obama and Michelle and Bush, and especially after they went to the wreath-laying ceremony in Arlington. They filmed that little piece that they showed last night as part of a unity display where former presidents, Republican and Democrat, can get together and say, hey, listen, we had differences, but we listen to each other. We work alongside of each other. Yeah, so it was phenomenal. The day was glorious. The reflecting pool was just absolutely stunning. The night before, actually, with Kamala Harris and her husband, the picture with them with their back towards the Lincoln Memorial, looking at the reflection pool with the monument in the background. Phenomenal. Just tingly. I was tingly all over. I know. But the day was really, really great. I loved Lady Gaga's singing of the national anthem. I think she tore it up. I think she was one of the showstoppers. Just phenomenal. I mean, just off the charts. I think it was appropriate. And what I didn't like, though, was having J-Lo there. I mean, J-Lo, her Twitter account is probably just starting to cool off from her performance in Times Square for New Year's Eve. And why didn't they get somebody who was, you know, maybe an up-and-coming singer? Or how about somebody from Broadway? I mean, Broadway's been dark. These people are just jonesing to perform. I just thought, believe me, it wasn't a terrible thing by any means, because J-Lo is certainly a display of diversity on stage. And I thought that was really, really present in yesterday, all of yesterday's events. The fact that they had the officer, the D.C. officer, there at the inauguration, who was the one who misdirected or redirected the rioters when they were inside. So he was a hero, and I believe he got promoted as well. But just to see everyone, and we'll talk about Biden's speech, and we're going to hear from some words from the actual incredible words, and we'll hear from the incredible poet laureate that I just thought was just spectacular, Amanda Gorman. Wow, 22. Harvard grad. So there's so much to cover. What did you think of the day? Are you still kind of deflated of what took place in the last 4 years? And that's, you know, easy to understand how you can be. But just think about what took place yesterday. I mean, he signed so many different articles on the first day. He went to the Oval Office and actually got work done. Kamala came back to the Capitol and swore in a few senators and the one who replaced her as well and started working. And I think this is phenomenal. What a great display of just realizing how much work is needed and not wasting a second's time. But anyway, getting back to the actual inauguration, and I also really enjoyed the Pledge of Allegiance. It was a firefighter named Andrea Hall, and she led the Pledge of Allegiance spoken and in sign language. How encompassing is that? That's just great. Inclusivity. That's what we strive for. She's from Georgia, and apparently she was the first Black woman hired and assigned to a station at the City of Albany Fire Department in Georgia, and that she became the first Black woman to serve as fire captain at Fulton County Fire Rescue. She was a rare woman in an industry dominated by men. And I think this was a great point to be made yesterday. The fact that not only is Kamala Harris the first woman VP, she is a woman of color, African American, South Pacific, Indian descent. My wife is Indian, so I have a special relationship. I am just over the moon with how special the day was and how well it was executed. Of course, you know, there weren't many in attendance, but they did a really nice job aesthetically in making it appear as if the mall was not barren, wasn't empty, by putting the flags that look absolutely stunning and gorgeous the night before, the inauguration eve, with the lighting, just tremendous. A glorious, glorious design that I always thought so. It's one of my favorite places. That actually is my favorite place in D.C., the mall between Lincoln Memorial and the Capitol Building. Just glorious. Of course, you have Vietnam Memorial. You have all the different monuments in there as well. Washington Monument. I like. It's not my favorite, but Lincoln Memorial. I could spend hours there just marveling at the just awe, the structure, the simplicity of it, reading the inscription beside Lincoln, and just taking it all in. The history, the concept of what our forefathers had. I mean, it's pretty damn amazing how all this was conceived hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Okay, I'm getting off on a tangent. But I really was just taken about how well the overall day was executed. Very, very impressive. And the fact that, you know, just days before, pretty much a war zone. And I don't want to spend too much time on Trump at all. But I did certainly catch a little bit of the morning portion where he gave his final goodbye speech, but not goodbye. I'll be back in some form, he said, and we love you. I'm not sure he is capable of loving anything besides, of course, himself to a disgusting degree. But that was weird. It was at the an Air Force base, and I couldn't tell exactly how sizable the crowd was, but it looked like a small bunch, of course, very closely together, and of course, very, very few masks. And of course, he got on Air Force One for the final time, and then his family followed him up. But it was just really kind of sickening. And you know what? You can actually feel bad for some presidents when they're leaving office, whether you voted for them or not, whether you like their performance or not, because it's a huge, huge turn of lifestyle events. But I do not feel bad for him whatsoever. I feel bad for our nation. But I feel very, very hopeful, very, very, very positive. So anyway, he got in the plane, off he went, and apparently he's in Mar-a-Lago. And I was saying to my wife, what about his feeling? How is he feeling today when he wakes up? What, I mean, can you imagine a day after you're out of office thinking, what the hell am I going to do now? And for him, he's probably saying, how am I going to restart and ascertain another platform like I had? The fact is, if he's found guilty in the impeachment process, he can never hold another federal office. So that'll prevent him from running for president ever, ever again. He just is not allowed to do it. Anyway, so with that as the backdrop, I think it made everyone feel even more positive, more hopeful of the future. I mean, there is so much to be thankful for. And the scary thing is that I think it was actually yesterday or Inauguration Eve that the first person died of COVID-19 a year ago. Wow. That's heavy. And that yesterday, over 4,000, I think it was 4,100 or 4,400 people died yesterday alone. On the first day of Biden's, actually not even the first day, half day of Biden's presidency. Really unfathomable. Oh, last night, the press secretary held a press briefing. And wow, was I impressed with her. I think her name is Jen. I forget her last name. She was, I'm probably going to overuse this expression today, but a breath of fresh air. Wow. I mean, all media outlets and reporters must be doing cartwheels because she's courteous, she's professional, she's thorough, she's clear and concise. She says, listen, there's going to be certain times that we don't agree, but that's okay. That's why we're here. That's your job, and this is my job. And she answered multiple questions. And you can hear, actually, when she reached out to someone in the back row who wasn't with a prime major American network, the woman was like, oh. She was kind of like shocked that not only did she get acknowledged, but she has an opportunity to ask a question. So kudos all around. Number one, I think it was, I don't know how many different presidents it's been since they've actually held a press briefing on the day of the inauguration. That says a lot about the initiative and the work ethic and the goal of the Biden office, right? I think so, because they're putting it right out there. I mean, they have no time to waste. They have to hit the ground going 1,000 miles an hour. And this morning on Today's Show, when I was driving to work, I heard that the new head of CDC was on, and she was being grilled by Savannah Guthrie. And I was really a little bit dismayed about the fact that the new CDC director did not know if they were going to be able to keep up the 1 million vaccinations per day going starting from this day, day one. Is there enough supply to make it go for the next 2 or 3 weeks? She was not prepared to answer that question. I would have thought, because she kept saying, the new director, that they've been working on this for weeks. So why wouldn't they be up to speed on if they have enough supply from both manufacturers to vaccinate their goal of 1 million Americans per day? So anyway, not a big deal. I'm not going to harp on that. But the fact is that they came out of the gate blazing, man. Really, really ready to handle and tackle everything that needs to be tackled. And man, is it a vast, vast array of redoing the undoing that Trump did, the Paris Climate Agreement, and so many other things. Oh, yes. And ceasing the pipeline agreement that Trump started. I don't recall the name of that, but it may ring a bell for you. But anyway, there's a lot of repairing to do, a lot of repairing. And that's fine. We'll get through it. But the fact is that I'm sure the rest of the world is very, very happy, almost as elated as we are. But no one can feel as good as we do, because we obviously were the victims of President Trump, number 45. And wow, just to see that display. I think everybody in attendance yesterday was just so happy about the opportunity, just over the news of getting that jackass out of Washington, D.C. is enough to make everyone jump for joy. Do you feel that way? Did you feel that way? Oh, I so did. I so did. Now, I think Biden's speech was appropriate. I think it was strong. I think it was sensitive. And certainly with a few worthy Trump jabs. You know, he's never been, and this is not an attack on him. Everyone has their strong points. He's never been a strong orator. And I'm sure it stems from the fact that he had a speech impediment. And maybe his confidence isn't there. Or maybe he just doesn't have the goods. And that's okay. But you know, yesterday he did. I think it was probably the best speech of his career, because he justly brought his energy down when he needed to, and brought it way down. It was very, very solemn, talking about COVID and the deaths and how unthinkable, unfathomable it was. And then he would ramp his energy back up. So I thought he did an amazing job. And I hope he's really, really proud of himself, because he really, really shined. And here's an example of that.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day. A day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge. Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy. The people, the will of the people has been heard, and the will of the people has been heeded. We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Yeah. Well done, Joe. Great job. Great job. And there's a great picture going viral of a New York City subway stop that says 46th Street, 46th. And it says Joe, 46, obviously being a 46th president, and Joe. And then below that, there's an arrow, which usually is in subway stations, that points to the exit. And it says 45 out, pointing the other way. What a fantastic metaphor, and how creative of New Yorkers and artists to take the time. Because most New Yorkers, I think 75% of New York City voted for Biden. And that was very, very fitting. So yeah, I thought his speech was great. I thought his cadence was good. And it just really, really hit home. It was powerful. And it addressed a lot of things with not being too negative at all. Very, very positive. Always, always took the high road. And I think that says a lot about a person, especially when it could be so easy to come into office and just swing a hammer left and right at someone like Trump. But why? Yes, you can talk about the divisiveness and all the things that he caused a wedge in and just decimated. But why do that? Let's talk about, okay, some of the things that happened, how we're going to repair them, and how we're going to unite. I love the fact that Garth Brooks, as a Republican, appeared, an outwardly Republican, and said, yeah, I'm a Republican, but this isn't about being a Democrat or a Republican. This is about coming together. Good for you. And I guess he didn't get the memo about it being a black tie event because, of course, he wore jeans. And I thought that was very, very cool. And you know what? I don't think he could help himself hugging everybody on the way out because that's kind of like the Mark Farrow in him. He just has this pure energy that's he can't control, man. Again, I thought Lady Gaga did a great job. And yes, the other showstopper, Poet Laureate Amanda Gorman.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans, and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president only to find herself reciting for one.
Just hearing those few words from Amanda just take me right back. How my wife and I and my kids, my 8-year-old and my 11-year-old, were just enraptured. Sitting on the edge of our seats, hinging to every word that she said. Very profound, compelling, and just so accurate. For a 22-year-old to be so experienced, so insightful. Wow, man, does she have a long, happy journey ahead of her. Successful, successful future lies in store for her. Harvard grad, speech impediment. And what a great way to put your confidence into something that'll make you shine. Yes, I'm sure she was extremely nervous long before this, getting in front of a microphone. But that, I believe, is one of the things that fueled her. And that's one of the things, again, being a black woman, a woman on stage, was just another underscored component of yesterday. And all the moving parts, the people who were invited, the attendees, the references, were just really, really reflective of our country. And that's what lacked, certainly. Of course, we understand why, because we had a very closed-minded individual at the helm before, but we don't now. So thank you so much, Amanda Gorman, for sharing that speech with us. Apparently, it was mostly written, and then the ending came to her after, unfortunately, the riots took place, and she witnessed that catastrophe, that ugliness. And those words, I'm sure, just poured out of her, flowed out of her, because I think we all felt like we had to put pen to paper, or certainly pick up the phone, or communicate to people that we love in some manner, because it was just so, so awful. And the upheaval just left a bad, bad taste in your mouth. Anyway, so the Celebrating America concert last night was phenomenal as well. Very well done. Extremely simple during times of COVID, of course. Tom Hanks was the host, and it kicked off with Bruce right in front of the Lincoln Memorial, right on the plateau area of the steps. And it was just a very, very simple but powerful, powerful song that just kind of justified and encapsulated the feelings for that day as well. I thought Bruce did a great job. I thought John Legend was amazing, the way he just powered through that song and piano. Demi Lovato, lovely day. First of all, Bill Withers' song, how could you not go wrong? And of course, including the people. That was basically the underscore theme of the day, the people. Yeah, it was about Biden yesterday. Yes, it was about Kamala Harris yesterday. But more importantly, it was about you, you, and you, the people of the United States of America. Whatever color, whatever gender, wherever you hail from, this is your home. And we're going to make it better. Yes, we can't change what took place for the last 4 years. We can't bring back the over 440,000 lives, 440,000 lives or so that we've lost. No, we can't. But we can bring back hope. We can institute new policy. We can institute new policy. We can make things change and a much brighter future for this country. Katy Perry, oh my God, chills up my spine. Bon Jovi, I don't know what's going on with John Bon Jovi, man. Is it me? No, it's not me. I have great ears, bad eyes, great ears. Man, his voice just sounds horrible. I don't know what's going on. Unbelievable. But it was just a remarkable, remarkable coming together of great voices and hope. Yeah, I know I've been saying the word hope a lot, but that's what it's about. That's what I walked away with. That's what I feel today. And I love how they showed Biden in the White House with the First Lady, Dr. Biden, and how he was watching the TV from afar and holding his grandchild, just bouncing up and down and dancing, and his family behind him in a safe distance, all masked up. What a great, great display of being safe. As a matter of fact, I hope you heard that one of his first mandates was masks are required on all federal properties. Masks are required at all federal properties. Yes, of course, that makes complete sense. Why wouldn't? Yes, well, we know why. Number 45 didn't do that. Sorry, I won't go back there. Try not to do that. But yeah, it was great how Kamala Harris and the first man, the first gentleman, were standing in front of the Lincoln Memorial watching the fireworks as Biden and his wife were standing on the balcony watching the fireworks as well as the backdrop behind the Washington Monument. Wow. I mean, some stunning, stunning pictures. I actually am considering trying to acquire one online and buying one and frame it, because I think it's really emblematic of a time right now, but certainly when we move forward 5, 10, 15 years from now, I don't want to forget this period. I want my children to remember this time in history of what took place, the destruction, the rebuilding, and the opening of persons' eyes. We have to get past this. We will get past this. I'm an eternal optimist, but I'm also a realist as well. There's a lot of goddamn work to be done. And we'll get it done by Joe Biden, by Kamala Harris, by hopefully both sides of the aisle working together. And yes, by us, you and me, we have to reach out to people that we may not ordinarily talk to. We got to help people as we've been doing, and even more so in a safe manner, because it takes a village. All these villages cumulatively together make up our great union, and we can do it. And there's not been a better time in modern history than to dig ourselves out of a major, major, deep rut. Let's do it, America. Are you up for it? Yeah, man, I know you guys are. You're progressive. You're devout listeners, and you do that for a reason, because you're interested in change and movement, and let's do it together. And let's meet an incredible individual who's doing something as well on a different level. Amy Friedman, it is a pleasure to meet you. Number one, we have a lot of things in common because we love lifting kids up and putting them on our shoulders.
Yeah.
What a great hobby and profession to have. You're fortunate.
It is. Yeah, I am fortunate every single day. Yes.
Author, writer, teacher, and prison rights activist, and co-founder and executive director of POPS, a school-based program, Pain of the Prison System, the acronym for POPS. And you know a lot about the prison system because years ago, you became involved with someone. Tell us about that, please.
I did. So many, many years ago, it's 25 plus years ago, I was a newspaper columnist, and I lived in a city that had many prisons nearby and decided that I really needed to find out how prison worked. And I got myself invited in. There's a very long story to this, but I was doing a series of stories on interviewing everyone inside, prisoners, guards, administrators, teachers, psychologists. And I ended up falling in love with and ultimately marrying a man who was in prison.
Well, you know how to pick the men who are accessible, don't you? A psychologist would have a field day with that.
Oh, well, many have. he had two very young daughters at the time, and those daughters became my daughters, who I raised, who are now older than I want to admit they are. In that experience, I learned really, really firsthand what it is to love somebody who's in prison, and particularly what it is for kids who have parents who are in prison.
So that was your first exposure in terms of the outcome of what can happen to kids. And this is a staggering fact that nearly 3 million children in the U.S. have at least one parent in prison. That's mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, and the more mind-boggling statistic to look at it, when to think about it, is in the United States, one in 14 children has a parent who is or has been incarcerated. And so what that means is that every single classroom in the country is likely to have at least one or more kids. But it's not something we usually talk about. It's not something they talk about. And so we kind of brush it under the rug and don't pay attention.
Amy Friedman, who would have thought that, you know, an assignment, what was the actual overall assignment, if you can give it to me?
Well,
going to the prison.
I was fortunate enough to be a columnist. And so I was also fortunate enough to be able to write about whatever I wanted to.
Oh, perfect.
So the assignment that I gave myself was that I wanted to kind of be like a helicopter view of what prison is like. Getting the story of how prison impacts people from every single perspective, and just writing those stories. So writing from the perspective of being, say, a 17-year-old who's incarcerated as an adult, from being a warden, from being a guard, and so on. And I was in the midst of doing that series when, it is a complicated story, Mark.
But it's very compelling how it opened up, not only obviously doors to this incredible journalistic opportunity, but for your life and the trajectory of the remainder of your life.
Yes. It totally, totally changed my life completely.
Mm-hmm. And how old were the daughters? I think you said daughters. He had two daughters?
Daughters, yes.
Daughters at the time.
They were 8 and just turning 13. that delightful age.
So that's a difficult age for someone who's out of left field to come tromping into the picture. Or were they welcoming they needed a guardian?
There were all kinds of complexities there too. I would say that from the minute I met them, I adored them. I think we have in our lives together for these many years, gone through many, many phases. The younger daughter, you know, was always easier. I think just because she came into my life when she was so much younger. But both of them, I think, felt safe and loved and cared for. And we had a kind of wonderful relationship with each other.
So how many years later did it dawn on you, or was it fairly immediate? You don't know where I'm going, but you're thinking like, wow, this is open-ended. That, you know what? There are so many people out there, so many kids, just like these incredible kids that I'm becoming a part of, that really need attention, opportunity, support, and a platform.
Yeah, well, it was many years later, but I will say I my activism began by representing families, because what I realized, you know, one day I was a journalist going into a prison, and I was considered like a friend, and I was allowed to bring in anything I wanted, and I was above suspicion and so on and so forth. And the next day, when I was a prisoner's wife, I was suddenly completely suspicious, couldn't bring anything inside.
Full body search.
full everything. I mean, you know, the whole perception of who I was in other people's eyes changed. Well, without my having changed.
I'm sorry to interrupt here because that is worthy of a piece of itself, because the perception, which we'll get to, of imprisoned individuals when they're ex-cons. So you immediately felt maybe a feeling of violation and certainly a major role shift.
Absolutely. And also recognized it in all the people I met. In my daughter, you know, recognized what all these amazing women and men, mothers and fathers, wives, daughters, sons, cousins who were visiting were experiencing. And so my activism began by trying to represent families. My ex-husband and I were married for 7 years, and we divorced. And several years after we divorced, I fell in love with and married the man I am now married to. I sometimes will joke my present husband, but I think he's the last.
Do you joke that way when he's not in the room?
Yes.
Okay, good.
We'll just keep it
a secret. Listeners, don't say anything.
But he is a high school teacher, high school English teacher. And when he and I got married, first of all, my daughters became stepdaughters to him as well. He adores them. They adore him. And so we started kind of educating him on the experience they had had and I had had. And also, because I'm a writer and have been a writing teacher for, again, more years than I want to admit, I started going into his classrooms, teaching memoir and personal essay to students he was working with. And inside those classrooms, I would hear a kid say something like, yeah, well, my dad's not around. Or, yeah, I haven't seen my mom in a few years. Or, you know, just, and they'd never say why. And I'd sometimes say, prison? And they'd sort of stare at me like I was psychic. But in essence, that's when I started doing the research. And that's when I discovered the numbers. And that's when we both realized every single classroom he was teaching in. I remember he was teaching in one class. He had four kids whose fathers all were inside, one for stock fraud, one for toxic dumping, one for drug dealing, and one we didn't know. And so we just started talking about what can we do for kids like this? We knew my daughters, here's the thing about my daughters, beautiful and wonderful and brilliant and lovely as they are, they had been stigmatized from the time they were very young when their father first went to prison. And they had learned to never, ever let anyone know where their father was. And
what was your stock response?
Oh, they had all kinds of lies. I called them world-class liars. I mean, they would, you know, dad was traveling, or dad was an ambassador somewhere, or if people got too close and they knew they had to be open with them, rather than be open, they would drop that friendship. So the isolation, the depression, you know, I think we are only as sick as our secrets. And they were carrying around this secret that they felt they couldn't share. Quite heavy. And so Dennis, my husband and I, you know, we just thought, gosh, there's all these kids who are experiencing this. There must be something that we could do. And for years we batted around what is there we could do. And then one of his students, one of his most beloved students, was arrested and sent to prison. And he went to visit him. And when he came back from visiting John, he said, wow, now I really get it. Now I get what it is to love somebody who's inside. And he went to school the next week and was telling one of his classes. He started the day saying, last weekend I went to New Folsom Prison, and began to tell the story. And as he said that, one of the girls in the room, who never spoke, who kind of never lifted her head off her desk, sat up straight, pushed her hand up in the air, and he called on her, and she began to talk about her brother, who was at New Folsom, and maybe John knew him, and my brother's a great guy, he just did a bad thing, and he went to prison, and I miss him, and just on and on and on. And when Dennis came home and told me that story, I said, oh, I know what we should do, we should start a club. And that's how Pops was born.
That's how it was launched right there. Fantastic. Now, is this at the Venice High School then?
That was at Venice High School, which is where Dennis was teaching.
And how many programs are you, or how many schools are you in right now currently, Pops?
So now we are in 19 schools in 5 states and growing, planning to expand further, always looking to be able to expand, trying to, you know, it's a simple program, but it is also nuanced. And so rather than expand willy-nilly, we've been trying to keep it so that it's effective and powerful and supported. I'll tell you a little story, okay? Very first girl walked in the room, very first day of the first club, 10th grader, picks up her sandwich. There always has to be food at the club meetings.
Good icebreaker.
You know, you can't do anything.
Sure.
Yeah. They're teenagers. Second girl walked in the room, another 10th grader, and they looked at each other stunned because they had been friends since they were in kindergarten. And they had told each other all kinds of secrets, visited each other's homes. The one secret they had never shared, they both had an incarcerated father.
Wow.
And I saw the look on their faces, and I saw the weight lift from their shoulders. And I looked at Dennis and I said, that's it. We're going to apply for 501c3 status, and we're going to bring this to every school in the country. And that was 8 years ago, almost to the week.
I can't imagine the weight that would be lifted off. For example, there's two students who walked in the room and had this relationship. I mean, what possibilities just between the growth between the two of them. And then obviously when they leave that room and go home, whatever the environment is, whether it's a guardian, a grandparent, or the other spouse who's not incarcerated, how much lightness can be brought and possibility.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's the initial idea was to create this sacred space where people felt safe enough to be who they were and to share their stories.
Obviously they get support. They're able to voice their anger, their sorrow, and make plans and be engaged and have expression.
Yep. And find out they're not the only one. You know, so often, I mean, so many of us feel this way, right? If we're going through something, we think we're the only one, and teenagers particularly. And so when they hear other people telling their own stories, or when they read what other people write, they suddenly realize, oh, I'm not alone. So it's a really the room, the name of the organization came, it was named by the first group. And what they said was they wanted it to reflect the pain that kids who have loved ones who are incarcerated feel, but they also wanted it to reflect the feeling in the room, which was happy and joyful and connected. So
good for them. And it does reflect that. Well done. Well done. My name is Mark Fowler. The show is Insight on a Progressive Radio Network. Amy Friedman is my guest. She's an author, writing teacher, and prison rights activist. She's also co-founder and executive director of POPS, a school-based program, stands for Pain of the Prison System. And they come out with a book annually called Dream Catchers. And it's inspiring. It's enlightening annual anthology of art and prose. And I'll let you take over from here. But when did the first book come out? And was this a kind of a risky proposition, or you just knew there's so much creativity within these first POP program that it's a no-brainer?
Was it risky? Probably. But I didn't think about that. What I thought about was, number one, when I started seeing the things these kids were writing and or painting, drawing, photographs, I wanted to celebrate them. Because of my experience as an editor and a ghostwriter and a writer and, in the publishing world for a long time, I decided that they should be celebrated every year. So the first one came out in 2014, year two of the program. Each one has a different title. This year's is Dream Catchers, but they're always, so this is Dream Catchers Pops the Club Anthology, and it's number 7. The other reason for wanting to publish the book is that these kids are so wise and have experiences that I think we all need to understand. And so I think of them as these books that open people's eyes and hearts and minds.
Sure. It's transforming.
Yes.
For them, yes. And for the reader.
Yes. Yes. And people, kids love them, especially. One of my other favorite stories is one day one of the young women who was like an 11th grader came in and she said, oh, my fourth grade, my sister's in fourth grade and she hates reading. And my mom's so upset that she doesn't like to read, but she loves the POPS anthology. And this little girl, she took the book to school with her and discovered that there was another boy in her class who had a father in prison, and they started their own little private club. And those two kids are now in 9th grade and in a POPS club. So
outstanding.
Yeah.
The concentric circles are, endless, which is a good thing. So I imagine this is part therapy, part fun, part creativity. It's writing. It's transformative. It's venting. Feel free to add any more nouns in there.
Yeah. We also have a guest speaker program. So we have teaching artists come in and work with kids, but we also have anyone from formerly incarcerated people to judges, to corrections workers, to social workers, to filmmakers. The room in each school and each club looks a little different because it depends on, they're all run by a volunteer team that is comprised of one or more teachers and counselors supported by outside volunteers, and we train them. And so depending on the personality of the school, of the kids in the club, of that leadership team, there are differences. The similarity amongst all of them is when you walk in the room, and everybody has commented on this, it always feels the same. It always feels like this really warm, comforting place. Some of the leadership team, what I know, there's one club in Pennsylvania that the sponsor is an art teacher. So they do these fabulous art projects all the time. And my husband, who was the sponsor at Venice for many years, is a writer. So there was more emphasis on writing in that group. So, you know, that's where that where they just kind of look a little different.
This sounds karmic on so many different levels, Amy Friedman.
Oh,
I mean, meeting your husband and how he became so impassioned, and he's a writer. I mean, this is just getting better and better.
It has gotten better and better.
Sure. Well, personally, everything, also, you know, has to get sussed out over time. But the fact is, I mean, you came out with a model that has been obviously emulated in different states. And by the way, I want to ask, was there demographic information that you used, or was it rather that the schools actually contacted you?
It's a great question. And, you know, most of the growth has been very serendipitous.
One of my favorite words.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of what works best, I think, sometimes. But
yes.
I had a plan in the beginning, you know, and it was kind of based on demographics and need, and that plan really just never manifested. But what happened was we started hearing from people. So we would hear from a student or a teacher or a principal, or in some cases in Georgia, we've been growing kind of exponentially because we have a partnership with community and schools in Georgia that provide the leadership. And there's a woman in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Northern Georgia who is a powerhouse.
Fantastic.
And she heard about the program and she said, okay, we're bringing this to every school. And she's kind of always 20 steps ahead of
great.
Me. So I just have to keep running to keep
welcome
up
with aboard.
Her.
Yes. Type A's. We love them.
She's definitely a type A and a beautiful one. So, it's largely been serendipitous, and I'd like to say this to your listeners. We welcome hearing from anyone who's interested in finding out how to bring it to their communities. And we're working
contact information. Would that be popsclubs.org?
Popsclubs.org. Yeah.
So
popsclubs.org.
And I'm sure you welcome donations, obviously, in volunteerism.
Absolutely.
And any amount. Is there a program in New York City?
There is one program in New York City in Bronx Academy of Letters.
Fantastic.
And it's been awesome. We had grand plans in New York, and we still do, to expand further. But, you know, we're, like I say, that because of the sort of nuance of wanting to make sure that the support is there before we say, oh yeah, we've got the program, let's go. We want to make sure that the principal is on board, that we have established an
MOU.
The
infrastructure. Yeah.
And so on. Yeah.
Tell me about this exceptional story from a few years ago when a former student got in touch with you and wanted to meet. And obviously you felt that it wasn't possibly good news.
Oh gosh, Anthony. So we had 1 year at Venice, he had been a Venice student. This was a kid who had really struggled in his life. The whole family had actually been homeless for a time. And he came into the club, and it took him quite a long time to be able to sort of tell his story, and then longer still to be able to write about it. But I remember one day he got up in front of the room and he read it out loud to people, and we published him, and he graduated, and we hadn't heard from him in a few years. And he phoned one day and asked my husband and myself if we could go out for coffee with him. And we were thrilled, and we met him for coffee, and he started telling us the story of what had happened to him over the previous 3 or 4 years. He had graduated, he'd gotten a good job, he was doing okay, and then he lost the job, and he wound up living in his car for a period of time. And when he was living in his car, it was broken into and everything he owned was taken. Oof. And as he was telling us this, Dennis and I we talked to each other about it later. We were both thinking, oh, he's going to ask us if we, you know, we could loan him some money,
or you know, live with you,
could he move in with us? Yeah. We weren't sure what was
wheels were turning.
Right. But he then, you know, went on to say, now I have a great job and I've gotten an apartment, and he was doing really well. And he said, but there's just one thing. When my things were stolen, my Pops anthology was taken. And I just wondered if maybe I could get another copy from you.
Wow.
Because it meant so much to me.
Your heart grew another size right then.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That's amazing.
And he said, you know, he told us, you don't always hear this for many years, but he told us that the day that he got up and read in front of everybody just changed everything for him. It made him feel strong.
And it changes you and your husband.
Oh, definitely.
When I'm not on radio, Amy, I'm also speaking to kids across the country on different very, very vital topics. And there's nothing like seeing the impact or a nugget or a morsel of information that resonates with somebody. You can see it in their eyes. You can hear it in their voice when they come up to me and afterwards and speak to me. And when they confide in you and or they hear something that you can see the clicking almost in their brain, it's like, it is transformational and it fuels you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. I feel utterly honored all the time.
So we don't have
sure
that much.
You do too, Mark.
Oh my God. Yes. That's what fuels me. Certainly.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate during these times that I'm really not permitted into most schools because of lack of time, lack of money, lack of technology, et cetera. But before we run out of time, Amy Friedman, I want to ask you, is there a common theme or two or three that we can quickly kind of cover in terms of when kids who come into the POPS program, who have a parent who's incarcerated, really need to get off their chest or the thing that they feel so embarrassed about?
You know, I want to emphasize first that it's not always parents. Sibling, we have a lot of kids who have, a lot of girls especially, who have older brothers. I would say a common theme is that prior to POPS, they feel like they need to hide their true story. They feel like they need to not let people know. And that comes from both stigma that they have experienced, but also sometimes people who are incarcerated will encourage them to keep it a secret. Don't let anybody know. And sometimes they themselves have been cut off from that person. And so that another common theme is no matter what, they miss them, you know, even when they're really angry or hurt or disappointed, they feel that longing for this person that is important in their life. And it's important to be able to say that out loud in a place where it's safe to do that.
Have students who have, whether it's a sibling or a parent, when they are released and are still in the POPS program, do they remain often?
Always.
Great.
Because
that's a true testament to the program.
Yeah. And you know, and when people are released, it there's another whole set of issues.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And it's really great for them. You know, one of my mistakes as a parent was I insisted my girls go to visit all the time. Like I had this thing about like, we have to see, you know, we have to keep the family together and we have to see your dad all the time. And, you know, teenagers need to rebel and they need to not want to be around their parents. And I regret that I forced that togetherness. And so part of what POPS stands for is we meet the kids where they are. If they want to be around that person, if they want to reject them,
it's
if
not
they want
forced.
To be mad. Right, right. Yeah.
Has to happen organically. Yeah. Well, it sounds like everything that you and your husband, Dennis Danziger, who's also a writer and obviously still a colleague, you're both teaching still?
Yes, we are.
Great. Yep. And this is in Venice High School. Another reason to go out to California, Mark Farrell.
Yeah, Mark, come on
Oh,
out.
Man, I love Venice. Venice is awesome.
Well, you come visit us.
Yeah. Every
You're
time
welcome.
I go out there for work, I, you know, run along the boardwalk and bike and
You
don't call it boardwalk out there, do you?
What do we call it? Well, there are boardwalks, like
are
the
there?
Santa Monica boardwalk.
That's true.
The beach path is
yes. Popsclubs.org, popsclubs.org for information, questions about starting a POPS program in your school, or if you know an educator, please share this information. Amy Friedman, lastly, the article or articles that you wrote that actually brought you to the first prison, is that available online?
Wow, that is a great question.
Because I'm sure listeners would be intrigued to read about what you mused back then.
You know, I should put those onto my website.
Yes, exactly.
Right now.
If we can talk later, you can forward me that information. I can post it on the website. So listeners.
AmyFriedman.net.
That's FRIEDMAN.net.
That's right.
AMY, AmyFriedman.net. Amy, just congratulations on so many different levels to you and your husband and to your first husband. For being, you know, leaders in different capacities, certainly for the current generation and for future generations. And it's so difficult to be in school. I mean, to have relationships with parents in general, with different stages of adolescence and just the confrontations and opportunities and drugs and alcohol that all kids have or are faced with, and to stack prison on top of that, it's just seemingly insurmountable. But with your Herculean effort that you've made possible, that POPs exist in so many different states, and certainly in your school in Venice High School in Venice, California, just proves that, you know, there was a hole in the system, many, many holes in the system, but you're filling a vital one, and that's great. And I could have talked to you for probably two or three more hours. And
well, you're going to have to come out to Venice. That's
well, we'd love to have you back on the show here, but keep up the great work, keep writing,
Thank you, Mark.
And keep sharing your story, because more people need to know about the incredible work you're doing and opportunity. Because, and someone told me a line that always reverberates with me, I should say, that you're never as tall as when you lean down to speak with a child. That kind of says it all. All the best to you, Amy.
Thanks, Mark.
Now, there's an example right there. The power of one. What one person can do to make change. And that's very emblematic of what took place yesterday and what took place years ago and what takes place every day in the United States of America. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for being part of the show. Have a great day, and let President Biden's words sink into you as we evolve into a new chapter in America.
We shall write an American story of hope, not fear, of unity, not division, of light, not darkness, a story of decency and dignity, love and healing, greatness and goodness. May this be the story that guides us, the story that inspires us, and the story that tells ages yet to come that we answered the call of history. We met the moment. That is what we owe our forebears, one another, and generation to follow. So, with purpose and resolve, we turn to those tasks of our time. Sustained by faith, driven by conviction, and devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts. Thank you, America.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kid's school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.